Welcome to AMA Edgewise. I'm Dave Summers. AMA Edgewise is brought to you by the American Management Association. Vineet Nayar is Chief Executive Officer and full-time board director of HCL Technologies Limited, one of the world's fastest-growing information technology services companies. With over 55,000 employees in 26 countries, Vineet joined HCL in 1985 after earning his MBA from XLRI, one of the leading business management schools in Asia. And in 1993, he started his own company, ComNet, where he pioneered the innovative management practice, Employee First, Customer Second, EFCS, which is now taught as a case study at Harvard Business School. He's the author of a brand new book, Employee First, Customer Second, Turning Conventional Management Upside Down. Vineet, welcome to Edgewise.
Thank you for inviting me.
To begin with, tell me a little about HCL Technologies.
HCL is a global IT services company. We compete with the global IT majors. We work with most of the Fortune 500 companies, creating new innovative products for them, creating IPs for them, helping them transform the way they run their businesses, making them digital, and reducing their costs.
All right. Not only do you do innovative work, but you manage innovatively. The company is known for its EFCS program. What exactly do you mean by employees first, customers second?
Most of us in the corporate world do not know when to transform. It's like aging. Mm-hmm. When you meet a friend after 25 years, you suddenly wake up and saying, I've changed. It happens to the companies. They age without realizing that they're aging and they become obsolete.
Right.
So it happened to us. By year 2000, we were number one in anything and everything which we did. By year 2005, we had lost the leadership which we had gained over the last 20 years. And we asked ourselves, how do we build a business model which is not only sustainable in leadership, but is quite unique and different compared to others? So that's the background. The second truth about most of us is for every one Google or any one Apple, there are thousands and thousands of people who don't make it. So the question we asked is, if you want to succeed in business as a manager, forget about CEOs, let's talk about a manager. Is what you do important or how you do important? Hmm. So then we dug deeper in terms of what do you mean by how you do? And then we came up with a few questions. The first question we asked is, where is the true value created in any organization? The answer is, it is in the interface of the employees and the customer. The second question is, therefore, what business should the management of the company be in to maximize the value being created in the interface of the employee and the management? So you are in the business of convincing the employees what is the right thing to do, not directing the employees.
Yeah.
So if those two questions are obvious, how should the management structure, management philosophy, management ethos be structured so that you can do what the company is supposed to do?
Okay. So what can they do?
Make the management accountable to the employees. Mm-hmm. So once we understood those three questions, it was quite obvious that as long as the company is obsessive about listening to its employees and ensuring that it enables, enthuses, encourages the employees in the value zone, our employees will create more value than our competitors, and that will become the compelling differentiator between us and everybody else. So therefore, we should be in the business of employees first, customers second, and that how could actually lead to competitive differentiation, which will be very difficult for others to replicate.
In your book, you mentioned the bigger the company is, the more important it is that employees go first. Now, why is that?
The larger the company is, the more difficult it is for one person or a group of people to run the company. Hmm. When you do a startup, the guy who innovates is the head. He gets a bunch of friends together. They all think together. They work together. It is an employee-first organization.
Right.
Once the startup becomes very successful, unfortunately, you suddenly start believing the innovator could also be the executor and constantly innovating despite the fact that you have thousands and thousands of people. And that is the time the value zone, which is the employees, moves far away from the control zone. And therefore, large companies start slowing down without realizing that they have slowed down.
Right.
The employees first, customer second is the ethos of how startup companies get created. But when they become bigger, they don't keep the same spirit intact.
Of course.
One of the first things which I realized when I took over as head of the company in 2005 is I didn't know a thing. I didn't know a thing about technology. I didn't know a thing about the customer problem we are solving. I didn't know how we are solving it.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that I could convert that into a strength as long as everybody in the company knew that I didn't know a thing. So if I told everybody that I didn't know a thing, then somebody out there will do something about it because you don't want the company to sink.
You know, Vineet, looking at employees first and customers second, you go beyond just making it a philosophy because you actually make tactical changes to the organization to bring this about. But I need for you to define some terms for us. What is the value zone and what do you mean by accountable?
The question is, where is the true value being created in a services industry? A Boeing 777, you fly with Singapore Airlines and United and with somebody else, and you know the difference.
Sure.
The difference is the service being provided and not the equipment on which you are riding. That's the value zone. Now, the value zone today, Dave, between you and me is the kind of questions you ask, which will reflect the quality of the interview. And whether more people will listen will depend on the value being created here.
Mm-hmm.
So whoever your boss is, it really doesn't matter because this is where the value is being created. Now, the question is, what should the management, your management and my management be? They should enable, enthuse the creation of this value. They should try and listen to you. They should say that this is what we need to do. This is what we should not do. The more they listen and the more they believe they are in the business of enthusing, empowering, enabling the value, the more value you will create because they cannot come into this interview and interview me. You are doing it. That's a decision they've taken. So that's what we call the value zone.
Exactly. So let's talk a little bit about accountable.
Organizations think like this. There is a control pyramid.
Mm-hmm.
Manager on the top, the employees on the bottom.
Right.
And this is about every manager. This has got nothing to do with the CEO. That you are the manager of a team and you are a control pyramid where you want to control because of various regulatory reasons or whatever reasons. That's fine. Let that pyramid continue. If the value zone is where the employee is creating it, why don't you invert the pyramid, which is what I call the value pyramid? So when it comes to value, say I don't know when you don't know. Say I want to listen when you want to listen. Say you decide when you think you are not the right person to decide. So you create a star organization, a control pyramid and a value pyramid.
Right, right.
And that makes the management accountable to the employees for the value as much as the employee is accountable to the manager. And you create a beautiful organization, which is what I call the employee first, customer second organization.
Okay, so it would seem that your employees would be highly motivated because they'd have a great deal of opportunity to utilize their ideas, to influence their work, improve the general operation of the company and see the results of that effort.
Yes, but I think it goes beyond that.
Why is that?
The generation which is coming into our workforce is Generation Y, which is 50% of the population of the world. They live in Facebook. They're open. They're transparent. They're collaborative. If you want to maximize the use of that human capital which is coming in, it has got nothing to do with motivating them because the moment you use motivation, you're trying to say that you have the power to motivate me or demotivate me. Forget it. That's not the way things work. If you want the whole of me to work for your organization, then this is the way your organization structure should be. You can't say, I want you to work for me and then define a role which I'm not used to. So if you want me, you need to change. That's the way I see it.
Oh, yeah. But why is it important?
In HCL, for example, we grew 21% in recession when everybody was degrowing. Our attrition is the lowest in the industry. Our employee satisfaction is number one. And our customer satisfaction grew by 43%. It's all of it together. If you convert employee first, customer second only as a motivational tool, then I think it's too much effort for too little gain.
So we're really talking about transforming the organization. But what kind of employees do you look for that can work in such an organization?
The first thing to think about
mm-hmm.
is the emerging markets are driving growth. The demographic profile of consumer is changing. How he consumes is changing. And therefore, organizations' product, their service, their geography, everything is obsolete to be able to succeed in future. Therefore, they need a huge amount of innovation.
Uh-huh. Sure.
Now, if that's what it is, and the 50% of the world population is Generation Y, and they are going to consume, then you will start looking for those people who are young and very innovative. And that is the source of energy and the source of resources which comes into the company.
Right.
Now, look at this in this fashion. If it is Generation Y, then you have to change your organization. If it is not Generation Y, then you can have your organization structured whichever way you want it. So it is less important who you choose to bring inside the organization. It is more important that you bring those people inside the organization where your organization fits into what they want to do, so that you can get the maximum value.
Okay, so what about people that don't really fit, but you need them in the organization?
The question there is, we have three kinds of people in an organization, and this is very general, but to try and execute a transformation strategy, it's important to bucket people.
Okay.
So one is the transformers, Generation Y. They ask you a lot of questions and they want to change things. The second is lost souls. Irrespective of what's happening, they will find something wrong.
Mm.
And the middle is fence setters. They don't know which direction they want to go. The companies which can convert enough fence setters into transformers accelerate and grow. If the companies do not focus on the fence setters, they will become lost souls and they will drag the company down.
So what should organizations do?
If you focus on the transformers and get enough of your transformers to believe in your vision as a manager, the fence setters will automatically convert into transformers and you'll be right on your way.
Now, in your organization, you're actually casting a new role for yourself. Could you describe that role?
Dave, let me take this conversation away from me.
Sure.
Because I am in the journey of experiment, and I may be wrong, I may be right, but I think the idea is bigger than me.
Yeah.
So where did we see this before? Let's see Mahatma Gandhi, Martin Luther King, Nelson Mandela. What were their leadership styles? They did three things well. First, they made you extremely uncomfortable with yourself. You're a slave, you're apartheid, or you are with under some foreign government's Raj. Your zone of comfort, they removed.
Mm-hmm.
Number two is they painted a compelling vision for future. You can be free. Third is they drew a line from here to there. That is what the transformation objective is. After they did that, then they were with the masses. They were not the leaders. They were behind you. They were very clear that who they are trying to transform is you. And therefore, they have to be behind you. They understood that very well. I think leaders and the managers who see themselves not in the front, but behind, and see themselves in the business of transforming and changing the way that people think, will succeed.
Right. Got it.
Two things happened in the recession. Number one, the managers called it wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, they panicked when the recession happened and started handing over pink slips. Now, there's nothing wrong with pink slips as long as you were transparent. You shared your problem. You came up with a collective decision that this is what we need to do. The problem is now the recession is theoretically over. We are on the growth path. Why should that employee trust you? Why should that employee give you 200%, which he was giving? Now you need him the most because you want innovation. Those are the questions which are being asked today. And therefore, the whole concept of employee centricity is more relevant today than ever before in our lifetime.
Vineet, do you believe that because of the way you've structured your organization, it lends itself to innovation?
I am very clear about one thing. We do not offer any new product compared to what we offered in 2005. No new service, no new pricing, no new geography, nothing new, and we are the fastest growing company. Recession hit us in 2008, yet we grew 21% year on year. We created about 1,500 jobs in US and Europe when everybody was handing over pink slips. Tell me one good reason other than employee first, customer second.
So Vineet, can you share with us a little bit of your philosophy as it relates to employee first, customer second?
The philosophy is you need small catalyst actions which will drive big change.
Right.
And there are many catalyst actions which I've defined in the book, which you can start taking tomorrow. And those small actions will start generating big ideas.
For instance?
The first thing is you focus on development.
Mm-hmm.
So we said we need to have a development relationship with our employees, not an evaluation relationship. Which instrument can we use? The 360-degree instrument. So we first converted the 360-degree instrument away from evaluation into purely will be used for development and no action will be taken. So then we said, how do we make people participate? I said, let me take the first step. When 55,000 people evaluate me, because it's not zones of control, but also zones of influence who can participate. Let me make it open. Let me make it public so that you know where I stand with reference to what your ask is. Now, when that happened, it unleashed a lot of enthusiasm in the company. We inverted the pyramid in the organization. The employee felt empowered. He really felt the CEO is accountable to him. So more of my colleagues follow. And today we have about 3,500 managers whose appraisal is done by 60,000 employees. and they put the results of the 360 degree out in the open.
Right.
That helps us celebrate that we are pretty good, we're doing a good job. And since it is development, all of us learn and start truly enabling the value zone, which we have promised in employee first, customer second.
Right. I have a question for you. You have what you call a transparency toolkit. Could you expand on that a little bit?
I believe four simple steps with lots of small catalyst actions has a high probability of getting you where your employees are going to work to their heart's desire to try and make you successful. Step one is look at the mirror and feel uncomfortable. There is a lot of truth to be brought out. Mm-hmm. You don't give it to your CFO to slice the dice in a form which makes you look pretty. You give it to him or her to slice the dice with honesty. You honestly look at the mirror and have an open conversation. All your employees know that you're in a mess before you're willing to admit it.
Oh, yes.
The moment you admit it, all of us are on the same page. The second is no change will take place unless there is trust. You create trust by pushing the envelope of transparency. So follow small catalyst actions which yield transparency. Your financial information should be on your portal. You should be available in HCL, for example. We have you and I, where all employees can ask any question of their manager. The only rule is that all employees asking questions, every other employees will see it. And the manager, when he answers the question, everybody will see the answer.
Right.
So if you go into my you and I portal, every single question is negative about HCL.
No kidding.
And one young employee told me very clearly, because I was getting depressed as to why is everything so negative, he says, all the gossip of the cafeteria has come onto your portal.
Right.
So you can either come to the cafeteria or let the gossip come to your portal. The second, which this lady told me, which is very nice, is the moment somebody asks a question, which is not good for the company, there are 10 people who climb on her and tell her, you know, you have a wrong perspective. This is what we're doing. So the automatic change happens. Third is invert the pyramid. Make the enabling function, especially the HR, the finance, accountable to the employees. So we have a trouble ticketing system where an employee can open a small trouble ticket. It'll go on to the HR or finance or administration or training, whoever it is, and they have to respond in a particular period of time. So if the number of tickets is very high, that means you are not proactively doing your job. So all that stuff and the 360 degree you do to try and make the management and the enabling function accountable to the value zone. And the last is transfer the ownership of change from the CEO to the employee. Say, I don't know. I don't have the answer. Don't look up to me. You have the answer. Tell me, what can I do for you?
Do your employees feel that they have access to you at all times?
I cannot say all employees will feel the same way. I believe they feel they have more access every day than they had the day before, because employee first, customer second is a journey. It's not an end statement. So they had digital access to me. They have physical access because I meet them face to face. I dance in front of them. I do all kinds of crazy stuff with them. But is that enough? It is never enough. I think it is less to do with me, my availability, my conduct. It is more to do with what I decide not to do.
That's interesting.
Right? Not to interfere in their ability to create that value, not to interfere in their feeling successful, not interfere in their taking credit for what they're doing. And I think it's a journey of learning. I'm learning. I'm making 10 mistakes and one success. But at least I'm walking the right path. And that's where I am today. I'm not here to declare victory.
Okay. But I'm just curious. Is it frustrating sometimes when you can't give an answer that you think is right and something happens instead?
First is, it's quite possible they were more competent than I am. So it comes easier to them than it comes to me.
Sure.
The second issue is the interface of the employee and the management, especially the managers. When I say employee first, does not mean your idea doesn't count. It says that your idea counts as long as it comes from the employee. So let's say that you want to go left and all the employees want to go right. You know going left is the right thing to do. Why don't you take that extra one day or extra 1 hour to convince the employees that left is the right place to go? And where the employee says, let's go left, you can be sure that you're going left. So you're in the business of convincing the employees, not directing the employees. So your lifestyle changes, your work style changes. You are in the business of convincing them what is the right thing to do. If you have a very strong opinion, in most cases, I don't have an opinion.
Okay.
But even if you have a very strong opinion, why don't you spend that extra bit of time convincing them so that the answer comes from them? That yes, we were thinking of going right. Now we want to go left. And it is our decision. And that decision stays and you will succeed.
Now, Vineet, an important part of communicating with your large team and the company in general are your influencing skills. Can you describe to us what your influencing technique is?
I think we miss the point if we stick to that question. The question is, how do you convince that person to go left when they are going right?
All right. What exactly do you mean by that?
I think when you walk into the room, you walk in with 2 ears and 1 mouth. You don't walk in with 2 mouths and 1 ear. When they want to go right and you want to go left, as much as you are trying to convince them, you should listen to what they are saying. Now, once you walk into the room with an open mind and try and convince them with your point of view, at the same time you're listening to their point of view, you will come to the right decision. In the end, is the manager's job to convince people to move left, or is his job to make the right decision? The moment the manager says that I'm in control and I want you to go left, and the employee wants to go right, the manager has to convince the employee why you have to go left. If his job's to make the right decision and keep listening, I think in that conversation, everybody get convinced to the right decision. It could be the employee's point of view. It could be your point of view.
Well, that's true.
In my case, most of the time, because my starting assumption is that you know more than me, the ownership of change is with you. The ownership of convincing me is with you. And therefore, my participation is more intellectual. I think you have to go back to my three leaders.
Sure.
Nelson Mandela, Mahatma Gandhi, and Martin Luther King. What did they do to convince people? Make them uncomfortable with the current, draw a vision for tomorrow, which is very compelling, and they're saying, how are we going to go from today to tomorrow?
Now, Vineet, is there anything else you'd like to leave our listeners with?
If you want to succeed, if you want to make more money, if you want to be the fastest growing or the most profitable, try and do it the employee first way.
We've been speaking to Vineet Nayar, President and CEO of HCL Technologies. He's the author of a brand new book, Employee First, Customer Second, Turning Conventional Management Upside Down. Vineet, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Dave. Thank you for inviting me.
AMA training courses are now available direct to your desktop. Our virtual seminars deliver the power of AMA training without the travel, without time away from the office, but with the ability to catapult your skill set and career to new heights. For more information, visit amanet.org/virtual-seminars. Thanks for taking us along. I'm Dave Summers, and you've been listening to AMA's Edgewise.